Hi, this is John Delancey, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
There is nothing wrong with your podcast player. Do not attempt to adjust the volume. Hello, and welcome back into our studio. You are now inside Studio 2009. I am, of course, TFG and Mike. Joining me once again, almost as always, is Mr. David Draper. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello. I am super excited. I have dreamed of this moment my entire life. I've always wanted to be paid to talk about my favorite movie, and it's finally happening. I'm so thrilled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Checks in the mail.
Oh, good.
We make sure it doesn't.
We've already talked about how much I love our United States mail system.
That's right.
And think highly of their mm-hmm. ability
make sure
to
that. Things. Yeah, make sure that envelope doesn't bounce out of his mailbag.
I will.
Today, once again, we head back to a galaxy far, far away. That's right. We continue the 12 months of Star Wars Spotlight as we make our way through the Skywalker saga today.
Somewhere in space, this may all be happening right now. 20th Century Fox and George Lucas, the man who brought you American Graffiti, now bring you an adventure unlike anything on your planet. Star Wars.
Here they come. Coming in too fast!
The story of a boy, a girl, and a universe. Big, sprawling space saga of rebellion and romance. It's a spectacle, light years ahead of its time.
I am C-3PO, human-cyborg relations, and this is my counterpart, R2-D2.
Hello.
It's an epic of heroes. Villains and aliens from a thousand worlds. Star Wars, a billion years in the making. And it's coming to your galaxy this summer.
We will be discussing Star Wars.
What? I thought we were doing Battle Beyond the Stars.
Episode 4, A New Hope. Oh, boy. All right, so
I'm literally old enough that I remember when it was just Star Wars.
Star Wars. So am I.
No, because they changed that. They actually changed that pretty quick, and people got annoyed. Like people keyed in on that pretty quickly because it was. I think the first year it was Star Wars, and then when they started working on Empire, they immediately they re-released it because there's this whole thing about Lucas always wanted to keep Star Wars in front of people's eyes, like keep it in their minds, which is how the holiday special came into existence. So it was a pretty quick changeover.
All right, well, I'm going to cut this part out because I have to stand up because I want to go get my old-ass VHS copies because it didn't change very soon after, I would think, because I have VHS copies that say Star Wars. It does not say anything about Episode 4 on the VHS cover. I have the original.
On the VHS cover, no. Dude, yeah. But Empire was Episode 5.
Yeah.
VHS, they didn't have a VHS version of Star Wars before Empire came out.
They didn't. Huh. That's interesting.
So. I mean, I've got the original release of Star Wars on. Yeah, the cover probably says Star Wars. They didn't start. Okay, they didn't start adding A New Hope to the covers until I think the re-release of
right. Party. Yeah. Yeah.
But the actual movie has it in there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, bro.
Yeah. No. You're right. Yeah. The actual movie. I was just talking about the cover.
No. The cover, they only started doing that. It's like they started doing Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I'm like, what? why you do that? Because it makes it look like everything else has Indiana Jones in the title. It's like, ugh, I hate it when they do that.
Well, that way you know whose franchise it is, because otherwise people
That's for stupid people.
Oh, okay, no. Yeah, probably. But the thing is, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom, The Last Crusade. Because we don't count the other two. I don't, anyway.
Two more Indiana Jones movies? Really?
I don't think so.
I think I would have heard something about them.
Yeah. Fake news. Dial of Destiny.
Okay. I didn't even see that one.
Yeah.
That's how much that one turned me off. I was like, yeah.
But you know what?
I already saw you shit on one of my childhood heroes played by Harrison Ford.
What are you talking about?
And I don't really need to do it again.
What are you talking about?
Force Awakens.
Force Awakens? Huh?
No, the Star Wars sequels happened.
Yeah.
They're not quite terrible enough to like, and I actually kind of like some of Last Jedi. I know, I'm an apostate.
We'll get there.
I'm a monster. I kind of like Last Jedi. Some things.
And the funny thing is, I don't remember. What I remember, and again, we'll get there after these three films that we do here, but what I remember about Force Awakens is it's either her or him, and it ended up being her instead of
John Boyega.
Of Finn, yes. It's either Rey or Finn. And I was like, oh, it should have been the Stormtrooper kid, not the whatever.
I was fine with that. Like, what I had a problem with, I mean, the flaw with the sequel trilogy is that they never had a plan.
Yep.
Like, they never had a plan, and you really feel that with, like, I think Finn, most of all, you feel that with. Because, like, once the first movie's done, they have nothing to do with his character.
Yeah.
And you know, if it had been Finn, they would have had nothing to do with Rey's character.
With Rey's character, yeah. So you they know, had one was, too many characters in the oven.
No, it's just they didn't have a plan for those characters. Like you can have all three of those characters. Like, and then Poe was never really supposed to. Poe was supposed to die at the beginning of that film. and you know, but people liked his performance. Oscar Isaac's performance so much they brought him back.
Yep.
And then they really didn't have anything to do with him. I mean, he had the dumbest plot of Last Jedi, and then he just did nothing in. Again, they didn't have a plan, which we'll, I know we'll get to when we get to it, but I'm just
Yeah, but my thing is, like, I remember watching those three movies. I don't remember anything about them. Other than what I've already said, I really, the Falcon. But it's the Falcon. Like, come on.
But it's the Falcon. Yeah, I know, but, like,
yeah,
the problem is they leaned in too heavily with that.
Yeah.
Or like in, I think I said this when we did episode 3.
Right.
And I think I mentioned it in Rogue One as well, where like with Force Awakens and basically throughout the rest of the Disney trilogy, all the spaceships are from the original trilogy. And they're not even like the weird thing is, even in the original trilogy, when we get to Return of the Jedi, we get A-wings and B-wings and TIE interceptors. We get new ships.
Yeah.
And then 30 years later, we're back to X-wings and TIE fighters, because the whole thing was they wanted, particularly after the prequels, they wanted to bring people back with stuff that's familiar,
mm-hmm.
which is dumb. I mean, it makes sense. Like the Falcon makes sense because the Falcon's an iconic ship and it's not going to change that much.
Mm-hmm.
But like, just they lean so hard on nostalgia. Like the Force Awakens was okay, but it was basically just a riff off of the original Star Wars. And it was a thing that I accepted rather than really enjoyed, because I figured the prequels alienated the normies.
Yeah.
Like, it was only the diehard fans after the prequels. People forget that Disney didn't really break Star Wars. Disney got Star Wars already kind of broken.
right.
They did. The reputation was kind of damaged. In the eyes of the normies, the fanboys, you know, fanboys like me look for things to love in the prequels, you know, enjoy things like Clone Wars, you know, but it was not bringing in new people. And I think The Force Awakens did a good job bringing in new people. And then there was the thing I loved about Last Jedi was that, like I said, I didn't like how they kept doing all this nostalgia stuff in Force Awakens. And then Rian Johnson just took a baseball bat to everything. He took all the toys, threw them in the driveway, and drove over them, laughing maniacally. And I loved it. I thought it was great. I loved that they killed Snoke. I loved that they did all this crazy crap They blew up all the A-wings. They blew up all those, you know, they blew up everything. And I was like, yes. And then because I thought they had a plan. Mm-hmm. And then we get the last the Rise of Skywalker, and it's like, oh, we have no plan. And so, like, two-thirds of that movie is trying to fix everything that Rian Johnson broke. And it's like, if you guys had a plan, you'd build off of that rather than scrambling. Like, if you had talked to each other and interacted, you'd know what you were doing.
Yep.
That's the biggest issue I have with Last – not the biggest issue I have. It's a big issue that I have with Last Jedi is that that he did all this destructive stuff, but there was no idea of where you're going to go next.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't you can go crazy. You can go wacky. You can throw everything. You can throw everything for a loop, but you got to know where you're going, particularly since you're not the last – if you're the last one in the series, yeah, okay, go for broke.
Yep.
And if you're not the last one in the series, know where – have a net – go for broke anyway, but have a net. And they had no net.
Yeah.
And they also wasted Finn.
Very much. Finn
anyway. And I actually don't – we really should save this for the – but I was trying to love the subplot with Finn and Rose Tico, except it was a bad subplot.
Yeah.
Like I love – I to me, the idea of like the grunts – like I talked about this with Rogue One. The idea of the people who aren't the Jedi princesses – this is why I don't like the idea of Finn being a Force-sensitive Jedi. I like him being a normal guy, just a grunt, just a trooper, and he affects the course of galactic history.
Yeah.
You know? Like, while the Jedi princes, while the special, Wedge is one of my favorite characters. Because he's just a guy, he's just a grunt. You know? And that's what I love about Rogue One, is that the normal guys actually do all the work, while the kings and queens and princes and princesses kind of get all the glory. But they really let him down. And just, I'll bring it up again when we get to there.
Yep.
But there is this narrative, at least in my case, it's not true that Star Wars fans are racist and got upset that when they saw that a black person was in Star Wars. I love the movie Attack of the Block. I think it's either Attack of the Block or Attack of the Block. I always get that confused, but I do love the movie. Mm-hmm. John Boyega is brilliant. He is amazing. And when I heard they cast him in the new Star Wars movies, I was over the moon. Because I was like, Mose is in this movie? Yes! And then they did almost nothing with him. I didn't even realize it was going to be a comedic role, because he's not funny in Attack the Block. He's scary. He's serious. And yet, the moment that really puts a bow on that movie is the moment when he smiles, because it's the only time in the whole movie he smiles. Mm. And it's amazing. It's just, like, if you like 80s horror movies, like Gremlins or Critters, just go watch Attack the Block. It is so good. It's so funny. I mean, it's funny, but it's also like, I mean, it's a horror movie. I mean, it's a monster movie. I don't like horror movies. I like monster movies.
Yeah, you like monster movies, not and horror.
This one
movies.
Has one of the best monsters. Like, there are these black. You don't even know what they look like. They're covered in super black fur, so they almost look like shadows. But their teeth are like crystals, and they glow. So when they show their teeth, like, there's this glow, and it's so good. Now that we've talked about everything but Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope.
Written and directed by George Lucas, produced by Gary Kurtz, starring Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Peter Cushing, Alec Guinness, and more. The budget was $11 million. It's made $775.8 million. 121 minutes, May 25th, 1977.
And by the way, that $11 million was over budget.
Oh, I'm sure it was. Especially for those days.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of amazing how cheap these, like, I mean, obviously inflation and stuff, but you look at the price tags on some of these things, it's like, God, it's like, can't even get a Marvel movie for less than $200 million these days.
Nope.
Can't even get a Batman movie for less than, like, $100 million. It's like, he wears a bat suit and runs around in a city. He doesn't even have power. I mean, like, I love Batman. Batman's my favorite hero, but, like, why do you need all this money for a guy running around a city?
Because it's to pad Bruce Wayne's bank account so he can create all the gadgets and get the cars and the bat wings and the
But once you build the car, you got the car. Like, why you don't have to blow it up every movie? You got the car.
Well, yeah, you got to blow it up every movie so that way you get a new car. It's the insurance. It's the insurance premiums that they're
asking. Yeah, so Batman movies are an insurance scam.
That's right.
Everything's Zaslav's fault.
Wait a minute. Oh, right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yep. So I haven't watched this movie in probably 35 years.
Okay.
Don't dislike it.
No.
It's okay. Just that I've never had. Like, okay, no, I take that back. Not 35 years.
No, about a good. I was gonna say I get it. Like, especially now that I've been to Disney,
mm-hmm.
I get it. You either have like this childhood attachment to something, or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, when were you born? I keep always
feeling
80. Oh my God, yeah. Like, no. Well, but like for you, Star Wars was kind of a past tense thing, and for me, I always tell a story. I probably told this before, but like, first of all, like back in those days, movies didn't come out all at the same time.
Right.
They rolled out across the country kind of generally. And I was on vacation in Florida with my family, visiting my grandmother, and I was staying in the room with my cousins, and they were all talking about this great movie that they'd seen. They're going to go back to see it, and they had a little booklet from the thing, and they wouldn't shut up about this movie. And I was like, "Can I go?" And I was six, and they were like, "Nah, you wouldn't like it very much." And that movie, of course, was Star Wars. And then when it actually came to Durham, we saw it. Technically, I've seen Star Wars opening night. Because of the rollout. So, and the funny thing was, when the first time I saw it, I wasn't really sure I understood it, because I was six.
Yeah.
So, but by the end of that summer, like, I'd seen it like three times at least. And it was the defining thing of my childhood. By 1980, we'd even had the first sequel. We'd had Empire. We'd had Superman. We'd had Alien. Well, I mean, I didn't get to see Alien, but I knew it existed. Like, but we had...
Yeah.
The 80s were coming along. By the time you got to see Star Wars, we talked about this before, where like it was already kind of your part of your cultural osmosis. You knew who Darth Vader was. You knew who Luke was.
Yeah.
You knew you used the Force. So it wasn't really new. Like, but and the children of Star Wars, you had grown up with those.
Yeah.
So watching it this time, that was one thing that really hit me, was like, as a 53 year old. Who lives in a world where Endgame was a thing, where all these wonders that have spawned
mm-hmm.
from this movie, movie seems very quaint,
Yeah, it does. Even
the special edition where they added Starfighters.
I was going to let the audience know, we both watched the special edition version of Star Wars. We're probably both going to be watching the special edition versions of the other two films as well.
Well, I asked. We were right. watching them at the same time yesterday, and I specifically asked you, "Do you want me to go back and because I've got
the
original
I know.
Version. I've got like several different copies of the original versions.
Yeah.
Like, do you want me to go back? You're like, no, that's fine, because I'd never seen the Disney Plus version,
okay.
And it's also just like, as much as I love and champion physical media, which I do, like I still think streaming has a service to provide by being easier. Like
right.
to me, it's like I'm not going to quit streaming. Just because I have like the physical copy. I want the physical copies because I want to have them, because streaming services aren't going to last forever. They're not going to keep every movie. I mean, how many times do we have to learn this lesson?
Yeah,
these online things don't keep things.
Wait, so I'm a part of, I'm a co-host on a live YouTube channel show every Wednesday, Kai Dragon Media, and we do the Dragon's Lair. We've been talking about physical versus digital media for the last month and a half. So yeah, no, I'm a proponent of both. Like, I recently just got, because I need, one of my pet peeves, and going off on another tangent, folks, is that YouTube, in its infinite wisdom and everyone's infinite wisdom that's on YouTube, has never really uploaded a proper-looking, like, clear, I'm not saying, like, full 4K HD whatever, but something better than 420p or 240p or something. Tron the Next Day, which is the little special feature showing RAM and everything else from Tron Legacy, that's not really on YouTube. So I went on Amazon this month for my birthday, and I went and I bought the old Blu-ray copy of Tron Legacy so I could have Tron the Next Day, and I can watch it whenever I want in my Sony 4K Blu-ray player. So no, trust me, I'm all for both. I agree with you, yes. The ease of the digital is great, but you still want the... I think as we're recording this, the entire northeast part of the country, like AT&T, had this big outage or something.
I got an alert on my phone.
Okay.
I'm not even AT&T, but I got like government alerts on my phone.
I didn't get those.
They were like, well, if you need to call 911, you know.
Yep.
It's like, okay.
Yeah, I've seen that happen before, but like half the country didn't have internet for service or whatever for the last couple of days or whatever as we're recording this. And I'm like, okay, well, that means that I can go back to my physical media discs and put them in my machine, whatever.
Well, the more realistic kind of crisis is, you know, I made a Zaslav joke, you know, mm-hmm. and obviously he took a lot of heat for canceling Batgirl.
Yes.
And now everyone hates him for like not picking up Acme versus the Coyote or whatever.
Coyote versus but, like, Acme. You
know, yeah. It could have been Wise Staffy. We could be Wile E. Coyote right now. I hate to be political, but relief! Coyote versus Acme!
And, now that that's over, and by that I mean my career...
Disney Plus famously, like, they did the Willow sequel series, which got panned, and then they just dumped it. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of lost media now. Like, you can't yeah. watch it.
Yeah.
And the way that our society's morals, quotes, like, who knows what's going to be decided to be problematic in, down the road?
Yeah.
Who knows? Right. You know, like, and that was always my thing. I remember when Netflix was first a huge thing, and I was like, okay. And I was like, I can't find Harry Potter on this. Like, well, they don't have Harry Potter on Netflix. I'm like, well, so we're getting rid of our DVDs. For this thing that doesn't have, I mean, you know, because it was yeah. now it's probably on Max or whatever. But well, like, yeah. I like. What about if you like weird stuff? What if you know you like old weird horror movies or old, you know, like the smaller stuff that's not going to get archived that no one's going to love. Like, yeah. what if something becomes declared public? Like Song of the South becomes declared problematic. Mm-hmm. What if? And again, ironically, this whole tangent started by us talking about watching the special editions.
That's right.
Like, so yeah, like I want to hold on to that stuff because I don't want someone who isn't me to make decisions about what version of a thing I am or am not allowed to watch.
And I say this every podcast and people are probably sick of me saying this, but it is absolutely true. For me personally, I watch things and I look at them in the time that they were made. So you take any perfect example, and I know this is about movies and in this episode anyway, it's not about TV shows. The man himself is a monster. However, I grew up watching The Cosby Show. I learned life lessons from The Cosby Show. I understand it's problematic in today's society, or he is as a he was. I don't know if he's still in prison.
I think he's still.
I thought he died or whatever. But the point is that I look at things when they were made, and I look at them under that lens, and I try my best not to ask the question, "Does this hold up today?" Because it's not supposed to. It was George Lucas did not write and direct Star Wars. Episode 4, A New Hope, in 75, 76, 77, I don't know what was released in 77, whatever he was working on it, he didn't do that thinking 47?
47.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. 2024 minus 1977. Yep. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, 40 or 50 years late, he wasn't thinking 40 or 50 years into the future, like, what are people 40 or 50 years from now going to think about my movie from 1977?
Yeah, 47, wow, good math.
Well, I looked it up before the show, but I kind of forgot, too. I did the math on it. So that's how I look at these things. And with the special editions, I understand. You often want – I've been doing it with podcasting for 15 years. I will sit here and edit a podcast, and I will go back, and I will listen through what I edited to see if there's anything else I want to fix, change, whatever, before I publish it. So I'm always working on the stuff kind of thing at the time that I'm working on it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm not going to go – I mean, I may go back 15 years – ago and change something in an old podcast, but normally I don't. But I understand the need and want to do that. However, George, man, let's have a conversation.
There's a saying that art is never finished. It's merely abandoned.
Right.
But you have to abandon it at some point. You have to like go, okay, this is done. Yep. Like, move on. And I think Star Wars in particular has created this interesting question, which, you know, continues to this day, of how much ownership does the fandom have? I mean, technically, legally, none, right? We don't own it. Disney owns it.
Obviously,
But we saw a movie. We fell in love with that movie. A lot of us saw it a lot of times. A lot of us bought the toys. And George decided that I don't like this movie. I feel it was very compromised. I want to change it. That's not the movie we saw. It's a weird thing. And obviously, again, legally, he can do what he wants. But, like, it feels like a dick move. I think it's fine to change the movie. I think it's a dick move to hide the original movie, to never let us see it again. And there's got to be something in that contract with Disney that prevents that from happening. Because, like especially now, like, they need money. Like, it is stupid for them not to release, like, a Steelbox through Sony now, Steelbox set of the original trilogy, unaltered, cleaned up and nice. Like, that would sell so well.
So it's funny you mention that, because I was looking through here on Wikipedia, and I was looking at the thing where it says something about on March 20th, 2019, the deal was officially complete. Okay. On April 12th, 2019, Blu-ray box sets, 9 main installments of the Star Wars saga remastered in 4K was reportedly announced to be in development for 2020 release. Obviously, 2020, we had the pandemic, Hollywood shut down. But what happened to that? Where is this 4K release that we were supposed to get?
They went all in on Disney Plus. I think that's been the story about Disney in general, is they've gone all in on Disney Plus, and, like, everything else was falling by the wayside. That's why they did the deal with Sony.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Well, hopefully, like you just said, Sony will do something, because
Sony just makes the thing. Sony doesn't make the call. Like, it would have to be a Disney. It would have to be. I mean, to bring her up first time in this conversation, it would have to be a Kathleen Kennedy call,
right?
Or an Iger call. It would have to be somebody at the top saying, "We want to do this," and then Sony would make the thing.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, if that happened, what I would want on a 4K Star Wars original trilogy release is I want the original copy of the film, how it was intended in 1977. And then if you want to throw the special edition version on there, fine, whatever. Like, you know, Blu-ray and 4K, there's so much room on those discs. You can do all kinds of stuff. But the thing with me is, and I was trying to look and see when I misspoke earlier when I said it's been about 35 years. It's more been about, I don't know, probably 10 or 15 years since I saw it. Because I know we covered it over on our old movie show that we used to have. Because we did do, oh God, we did do the original trilogy and prequel trilogy a number of years ago. So let's just say 2012, 2013 was the last time I saw Star Wars. But I haven't watched it since then. And going back now and knowing this is the special edition, I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm, like, seeing all this stuff that I don't remember, and half my notes are either, and we all know the lines, folks, so I didn't really have to write the lines down. I kind of wrote them down more for social media than for actually discussing on the podcast, but, like, half my notes are, I don't remember that creature walking through wherever, or I don't remember that whatever kind of thing, because I don't ever remember watching the special editions when they came out. I only ever remember the original ones, ever seeing the original ones. And I'm trying to think, when did they...
It came out in 97.
Yeah, 97. Yeah, the special edition came out in 97. And I'd have to go back to those old Movie Week and Review episodes to see which version I watched back then. But today, now, watching the special editions is not what 44-year-old Mike does not remember what 7-year-old Mike saw with the original VHS. Because you're right, like you said, I did not see them when you saw them. I saw Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi all on the VHS copies that I have behind me. I saw them somewhere between 87 and 89. I don't know which way is up when it comes to which year I saw them in, but I remember watching all three of them on VHS in the late 80s. And that was the first time I remembered them. And going back and watching this, I was like, oh, they added that, or oh, they added that, or I don't remember this, or I don't remember, you know, so it's just one of those things.
Yeah, and to kind of jump, because I didn't want to interrupt you, to jump back to the point about releasing them, Spielberg famously, you know, he did his cut of E.T. that nobody liked.
Right.
But when he released them on DVD, or he released it on DVD, but he had, like, the original cut and his cut, and they had them side by side.
Yep.
Which is like, you know, I think that's fine. Like, I think it's fine to, like I said, I think it's fine to change and tinker with something so long as you don't try to memory hole the original, because that's an insult to everyone that has supported you all you know, like 47
years. You like an inferior film and I'm going to make it better for you.
Okay. That's what the kids these days are doing to everything. we're going to make Iron Man better. We're going to, you know, and I'm not even going to use the famous line from South Park, but it's what they're doing to make everything better.
Yes.
And it's tedious and annoying.
Yes. And I agree with you. Like I said, Blu-rays and especially now with 4K, there is enormous amounts of space on those discs now. This isn't DVD. This isn't VHS. This isn't Betamax. This isn't any of the old technology. You can put both versions of the film. Or if you can't fit both versions of the film on one disc, there are plenty of DVDs that have done, because Tron. Tron Legacy is one. It has the Blu-ray version, and then it has the other version, whatever, you know.
So I mean, it's not a space issue. It's a willpower issue. It's
true.
They don't want to. And the question is, and then there is an argument that I've heard stories that Lucas destroyed the original negatives in creating the special editions, and I'm real skeptical about that. I can't believe you can't find a copy to make of the originals anywhere in the world. You're Disney. You have money. You can do it. It's just there is, for whatever reason, and I mean, on one hand, I kind of go back to George's ego. On the other hand, like, it's pretty clear that Disney doesn't care about George at all. So I have no idea why they won't, but they don't wanna.
Yeah. I said originally when they bought Lucas, when he sold out to them, or they bought him up, or whatever the hell.
He gave them a price he didn't think they'd match, and they'd match it. And he was like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. When they bought out Lucas, I was like, oh, okay. He sold his shit. It's like me and Steve. If we sold GeekCastRadio.com, we really don't have any we don't have anything. If we're done with it, we're done with it kind of thing. Like, that's it. But at the same time, I like when companies or people or whomever still say, oh, they recognize the legacy of what he sold them, or whatever happens. Anyway, Star Wars, Episode 4, New Hope. When I watched this time, I was like, huh. That the opening battle, man, I don't know what was going on with the choreographing in that, but it just looks weird. It's not even the fact that the blast effects are weird. It's just the way the soldiers are moving, the rebellion soldiers, when the doors are being blown off before Vader comes in. It just looks weird, and that's really my only nitpick for that specific scene. But no, I enjoyed this. I thought it was fun. Love Han, love Chewie, love Leia. Luke's okay. Luke's a little wet behind the ears, but you know, you got to learn somehow. Obi-Wan just steals the show. Yeah. He really does. Between him and 3PO and R2, and obviously Vader, Vader's going to steal the show too, but did they do anything different to the Vader costume for the special editions?
I don't I couldn't tell you. I know famously it is different in Empire.
Okay.
Like that's there's a cool little detail in Rogue One where like the lenses of the eyes are red in Star Wars, and then they change them to black in Empire. And so in Rogue One, he's got the red lenses. Okay. And I also think they paint like silver on the chest piece, you know, the shoulder chest piece. There's like the little divots, the little. I think they paint that silver either in Empire or Jedi. And then at some point, like you see the cape on the outside, so it's got the little chain. Like I noticed that this time. Yeah. I probably noticed it before, but I noticed it this time is like, because I remember like the cape's on the outside with a little chain, and this time it's not. There are differences. Like you can see the screw places on R2, like where they put the screws in.
Right.
And that's one of the details that I did that I've always loved about Star Wars, and really noticed this time, because when I watched it, I had watched it twice because I found myself the problem is I've seen it so many times, and I love it, but I've seen it so many times that like you do get bored, you know, because you know the scene, you know the lines, you know everything, and so you're like, I'm playing on my phone.
Yep.
But I love that even 3PO and R2 at the beginning of the movie were all scuffed up and dirty and scratched, and I love it. Like, and at the end they're all nice and clean and shiny, but just, I mean, that was a thing that Star Wars brought to the genre that from what I understand hadn't really been there before. Right. And that's one of the reasons I think people kind of had an issue with the prequels. In the prequels, everything's shiny and glossy and new, and in Star Wars, everything's dirty and dingy and scuffed, like a real universe. You know, spaceships have rust on them, and that's there's a real, I can't pronounce the word, vermicet. It starts with a V. I can't pronounce it, but like a real feel to it. It feels like a real lived-in universe, and that was one of the things. Even the Star Wars movies, I think, got away from. One of the things, like in the Disney films, you don't feel the grit.
Yeah,
and in the prequels, you don't feel the grit either because everything's CGI and it's all plastic. And
right,
I think one of the really great criticisms of the prequel trilogy, if you've never heard of Red Letter Media or the Plinkett reviews, they're not just criticisms of the Star Wars. It's basically a free filmmaking course. Like there's just movie making knowledge being dropped in that thing from a couple of weirdos in Minnesota. But one thing he throws out is the idea that it would have been fine if everything had been shiny and new and glossy and plastic in Phantom Menace, but by the time you get to Revenge of the Sith, it should have been like grimy and falling apart, and traffic should have been left. You should have gotten a sense of the toll that the war took on the galaxy.
Yeah.
But you didn't, because it was still the prequels and it was still CGI and it was all very shiny and plastic. And so.
Yeah, I noticed. So what I noticed about this, besides some of the various opening, like the various creatures and ships and other things and the scenes feeling like they're expanded, I do not remember, and again, I need to find a way to somehow yar the original film, besides the fact of just going out and buying a VCR on Amazon.
Spending $1 billion on. Actually, I have no idea how much those DVDs cost, but
That's fine, but I noticed 3PO in the oil bath, and I don't remember that.
Oh, that's from the original film.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, thank the maker. This oil bath is going to feel so... That's where the famous...
Yeah.
You've heard about the trading card, right?
The trading card?
Oh, you've never heard of the C-3PO trading card?
I don't think so.
So when they released the Tops released the... I think it was like the second or third set. I have to look it up. But there's a picture of 3PO from the oil bath. And the way they took the picture is really unfortunate because there's like a pipe or something.
Oh, no. Shot,
and it looked like his penis.
Uh-huh.
And that card is not super rare, but it got canceled and switched out pretty quick. I've got a copy, but like it's a famous one of 3PO's data probe because it was just the way that shot was. It was just like, but yeah, no, the oil the scenes that are added, I mean, some of you can probably get like a lot of the shots of the Dubaks, before the Luxor droids, like the Dubaks walking around and the ship's taking off, and that's all CGI and that's all new. Like there was one Dubak prop that was sitting. I don't even think you get a good look at it. So to go back, one of the things I remember is back in the day
when I was still a teenager.
Teenager in the film, the 20s, I think. It was in my 20s. The Sci-Fi Channel, every Thanksgiving, would show the Star Wars holiday or show the Star Wars trilogy. But they did it in letterbox.
Okay.
And you have to remember that, well, you don't have to remember, but like Mike, all, back then they would format stuff for TVs.
Yep.
It wasn't even like, it's weird that like it's not even an option anymore. It's just like we do it letterbox because that's how civilized people do it. But back in the day, it was formatted for TVs, and so that's for over a decade, that's how I saw Star Wars. Because my mom was not going to pay $70 for a videotape. She didn't care what it was. She was not paying them because back in the day, again, videotapes, even tapes, were priced mm-hmm. just for rental stores. They were not yeah. priced to be owned. So there was no way she was buying Star Wars for me. So when it came on, I think Showtime, I had a VCR. So my experience with Star Wars for over a decade was the Showtime airings of Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi cropped, and then the little Showtime logo would pop up. And by the time I got to college, you know, these were tapes I made myself. I had a Betamax, actually. So they were my little Betamax tapes. Everything was blurry. Everything were blobs. Like, you know, it was terrible, but it was Star Wars and I loved it and we would watch it. So when Sci-Fi Channel would show these letterbox things, you would see stuff like you saw the Dubac, which was off in the corner, the cantina scene, like all the aliens that, you know, you had the action figures for, but you never remember seeing them. Like, it was like, were they actually there? Like suddenly they're there in the corner. So, you know, it's sort of doubly weird, that scene with the Dubacs where they're running around and they don't even look like they're walking on the sand, because that's when I realized, oh, wow, the CGI is not held up.
Yeah.
The beginning part of that is different. The scene with Jabba is added. They originally famously they filmed that with a dude, a human, like playing Jabba, a big fat human.
Right.
And that's why when Han walks around, he steps on Jabba's tail.
Yep.
Like that, they had to improvise that in the because he walks around Jabba in the scene.
Yeah.
Like, he would run the tail. And that's interesting in like the that's one of the things I wanted to bring up is in the '90s, in the early '90s, when the movie first came out. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. I'm jumping around the place. When the movies first came out, Lucas made a deal with the University of Southern California, where he went, and they did a radio play based on Star Wars, and they did one on Empire. And those mm-hmm. actually came out on audio cassette to be for the public in the '90s. So you could listen to them.
Right.
And I have all those. And then those sold so well, they actually went back and recorded one for Jedi. But it's like they had Mark Hamill. They didn't. They had like what was his name? He was on Riptide. That's Han Solo. Brock Peters was Darth Vader. And it was really interesting because the whole first couple episodes are stuff before the movie.
Okay.
So that adds a lot of stuff. But there's a scene with Jabba, but he's a different character because they knew by then that Jabba wasn't the guy. You know, wasn't the guy from the that they filmed it with. So they had a different. I think his name was Heater, but they had that scene, but they had a different character. So it's interesting, like the three different versions. And then in the comic by Marvel, they also had that scene, but it was a completely different alien. Like you can actually see him in the cantina. He's a weird Dr. Seuss looking alien, which they eventually gave him his own identity. But like he was the Jabba the Hutt up until I think Empire. Like they brought him back as Jabba, because there's a story arc where like Han repays his debt. He saves Jabba from getting killed, and Jabba's like, okay, we're even now. So they had to, like, in the comics, they had to go back and get Han in his doghouse again, because it didn't work. Because they didn't know. Like, one of your complaints is, like, that's it? Well, the comics are like, well, I guess that's it. We're just going to tell our own stories now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another, with the radio drama, there's another fascinating thing that we'll get to when we get there in the story, if we ever get there in the story. But in hindsight, it's really interesting when it involves Leia's interrogation.
Mm. Okay.
Because you don't, it's a radio drama, so you don't see it, but you actually experience what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not weird or anything. It's just interesting in hindsight.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, this movie, man, I still really like it. I still really enjoy it. Even the special edition, you know, there's all the quotable lines and everything else. And I forget which scene it is. I think it's probably when they're, where is it? It's probably right after 3PO kicks R2 at one point.
Yes.
I believe it's right before the Tashi. But I wanted to go to Tashi Station and get some power.
Think it's after that. It's when R2 won't play the message again. Or he's like being coy. He's like, message, what message?
The one
that's when 3PO really has it with him. Because when they meet in the Sandcrawler, 3PO is happy to see R2 again. Mm-hmm. Or maybe he kicks him when they split up too.
Something like that, yeah.
Rufio's got a pretty they've got a pretty dysfunctional relationship.
Yeah, that's true. So again, even though we've seen the prequels and we know now.
Well, okay, there are a couple of edges that don't quite meet.
Right. Like, no. And that's why I'm bringing this up. That's why I'm saying it this way. Even though we've seen the prequels and we kind of know now, there'll be no one to stop us this time. My thought was, you've done this before, Vader? Like, wait a minute. I don't know.
I don't remember when he says that.
It's right. I write my notes as I'm watching it. So it's right after the first, I'm going to regret this. I think Luke says the, I'm going to regret this line, but there'll be no stopping us this time. It's when they're looking for the plans or when they're trying to find R2 and 3PO because they have the plans and they're down on the planet.
I think he just means the way I always interpreted that was, it's been frustrating. Like, stuff keeps slipping out of his fingers. Mm-hmm. So, like, this time, you know, because they get away at the end of Rogue One, and he's chasing them, and then they launch the escape pod, which is always a weird thing. It's like, well, there's nothing on that escape pod, so don't shoot it. We don't want to waste our laser ammo.
Heaven forbid the price of lasers.
The price of lasers up. Going up. Well, hey, to be fair, the price of Tabana gas might be going up, because apparently they use that laser production. I just nerd answered my own nitpick criticism.
There you go. Okay. All right. Well, so you got Luke, you got Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
Moisture. Like any good fairy tale, he lives with his aunt and uncle.
Mm-hmm. Moisture farmers.
They're on a desert planet. I know, dude.
They're on a desert planet, but like. I don't know.
Okay, the way it works is they capture moisture at night, like the condensation.
Yeah.
And they grow crops with the moisture they capture.
Okay.
Like, there is some of this thought through. Like, it's not all.
Yeah, right. No. I know. I'm
willing to acknowledge there is nonsense and garbage. Like the Millennium Falcon made it in 12 parsecs. Parsecs is a measure of land space, not movement. Not a measure of time. Like, I get there's some nonsense, but like that one's kind of solid.
No, I know, but it's just like I see why Luke wants more, and that's also part of the coming of age thing. Like, I don't want to be
bro. I don't know. I don't know where you grew up.
Massachusetts for the most part. Okay,
Massachusetts, but like I moved to the Midwest when I was 10.
Mm-hmm.
The scene where Luke goes out and he looks at the twin sunset and the music swells. Any kid who has ever grown up in any sort of podunk, and maybe even an urban setting somewhere where they don't want to be, cannot be moved by that segment, by that moment of, I wish I was anywhere. But if there's a bright spot in the universe, bright center of the universe, this is the spot that is farthest from.
Yep.
Like, that hits to any kid who's not happy where they are. And I imagine part of being a child and being a teenager is not being happy where you are. It's always thinking that the horizons are better. The grass is always greener.
Yep.
And it just hits you, man.
Yep.
I mean, that could have been Hoth. That could have been anywhere in the universe. Like, I mean, just they stack the deck by making it a miserable little rock. which makes it a little more resonating. But like, I think any kid really feels that moment of, my God, there's something out there, and I'm missing it, being stuck here.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Absolutely. And I get it. And it's one of those things where I'm like, yeah, he needs to escape because life as a moisture farmer must be awfully boring. Because, like you said, it's a desert planet. Most of the time during the day, you're probably not going to be doing too much. You might be doing some stuff, but you're not going to be doing too much because, hello.
You probably are pretty busy, but it's busy work. It's, you know, stuff's breaking down.
Because
I have a friend who's a real farmer. Oh, my God. They have downtime.
Oh, yeah. They work all day.
They're busy.
Hmm? Yep. absolutely. So yeah, we get Luke and all that, and as far as I remember, when he eventually meets up with when Obi-Wan saves him, technically, they go to Obi-Wan's little domicile, and Obi-Wan gives him his father's lightsaber. Now,
he fun didn't fact, take... Not to interrupt, but fun fact, when they filmed Revenge of the Sith, mm-hmm. Lucas had to go back and reshoot, pick up a shot, because he forgot Obi-Wan picking up Anakin's lightsaber. They had to add that in like post because he forgot that. He's like, doesn't Obi-Wan have Anakin's lightsaber? Isn't that like a major plot point of the original trilogy, sir?
Yep. But Obi-Wan also has his own lightsaber, correct?
Yes, it's not buried in the dirt.
Okay. Well, didn't
at the end of the Obi-Wan series he kept it or something?
I don't know, because I don't know if I made it to the end of the Obi-Wan series.
I made it to the end, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either. But my point is, in the movie, there are two lightsabers other than Darth Vader's. There are two. There's Obi-Wan's, and then there's Luke's former father, you know, all that. I just wanted to make sure, because the scene where when we get to the Hive of Scum and Villainy.
Mos Eisley.
Mos Eisley, that's right. When we get there... And he pulls out the lightsaber. I'm like, wait a minute, didn't Luke have? Oh right, there's more than one. Dummy.
Yeah, no, that's Obi-Wan's. Like they're different designs.
Yeah, that's true. They are. Is it just me, or is the effect when Obi-Wan first hands it to him and he turns it on and does the little those effects don't look that great in the original.
They're clunky. Yeah.
I don't know. It just isn't, I don't know. That's the same thing, like I said, with the soldiers at the beginning. It just looks like they're moving weird, and I don't know if it's me and my old eyes and whatever else, but...
No, I'm not sure about, but, like, I know, like, when the Tusken Raider attacks him, mm-hmm. I don't know how to put it, but they kind of, like, re-loop the shot when he's, like, raising the stick over his head. Like, they go back
right.
And, you know, that it's like it's on a track, so it's the same shot like over and over a couple times, and that's noticeable. And I know, like, there's a lot of stuff they used to do back in the day where they would like shoot stuff in reverse. Mm-hmm. Like if you had a thing stuck to, like if you wanted to have a thing fly off of you or fly onto you, you would mm-hmm. you'd start filming it with it stuck to you and then like pull it off and reverse it, and you can always kind of tell. So there's probably a lot of like weird trick shots that don't quite look right to our eyes nowadays.
Yeah. Absolutely. What is your favorite scene from this film?
I mean, probably. I mean, I love Han Solo. I love the Falcon. But I do. I mean, the can as a kid, especially the cantina scene, because it was the iconic scene. You got all the aliens. Funny story that when he we don't know if he kills him or if he just lops off Pondo Baba's arm.
Yeah.
But Star Wars was originally set to have a G rating.
Right.
And that would have been the kiss of death in 1977.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't even think they release a lot of G rated movies nowadays. They added the shot of his arm lying there next to blood. They added that specifically to get a PG rating.
Right. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess my favorite scene would probably be, it's got to be most of the X-Wing and TIE Fighter stuff. I mean, I like the Jedi stuff. I like Luke, but, you know, it's really it's the space battles. It's the Falcon. It's the this. It's the, like,
that. You know, that's opening. A good, like, I always remember it being a highlight of the film this time around. Like I said, it was. You know, one of the things I like about we said about Rogue One at the time was that it kind of explains why there aren't a lot of ships.
Right.
But it does feel weirdly small.
Yeah.
You know, okay, there's not a lot of Rebel ships. Why aren't there like a billion TIE fighters?
Yeah.
Like that was weird, is how little ship to ship combat there was in that final sequence. It's all Darth Vader and his two wingmen.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, especially once they get down the trench,
Like, and like, well, like at when Red Leader does his run, like Luke, Biggs, and Wedge are just flying around up there.
Yeah.
We got nothing to do.
Yep.
I was like, shouldn't there be like 10 million Tie Fighters surrounding you guys?
There should be. Absolutely, there should be.
And that, you know, that's you know, we were talking earlier about applying modern sensibilities to films. Like, obviously, like, you know, at the time you're like, no, this is exciting. You know, at the time it was exciting, edgier seat stuff. Then you see Return of the Jedi when like just a fleet has like a billion Tie Fighters and they're everywhere, and you're like, oh, okay. So now looking back, you're like, well, unfairly asking how come you didn't have more at the time. Because even Lucas felt that, because he has that CGI shot of – he felt there should have been more Rebel ships.
Right.
Because there's that famous shot of them going around Yavin that's all CGI.
Yeah. I think – yeah, there were more TIE Fighters when Han and Luke were doing their gunner battle part of that. There were four. Yeah, there were four there. And then
– and they were described as picket ships. So they were just like – just no, but like they were like out there, like, yeah, just a little patrol, like this is like a full out assault.
Yeah.
Like, what are you saving them for? You think you got something on tomorrow on the schedule that you need to hold back on the TIE Fighters? And the whole point of a TIE Fighter is that it's dirt cheap and expendable. That's why they don't have hyperdrives. You just throw a billion TIE Fighters at your enemy, and you know enough lasers will be flying in the air that hopefully they hit something. Mm-hmm. Blast. By the way, they're blasters; they're not lasers. This is a classic Star Wars versus Star Trek argument. That Star Trek is like, our spaceships have special shields that in the Amazing Okana, it's established that lasers do not affect starships or Federation starships. So therefore, Star Wars would always lose because they use lasers. It's like, no, they use blasters. Yes. And if you look at the gobbledygook pseudoscience of blasters, it's basically equivalent to the pseudoscience gobbledygook of Klingon disruptors. Spaceship disruptors, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though they're completely different weapons, they call them disruptors, even though there's a handheld weapon and a spaceship weapon.
Yeah.
So, that always irritates. And especially because it comes from the Amazing Okana, which is one of the most garbage episodes of the entire franchise. And I'm including Discovery with that.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
The episode that was a literal Mary Sue. he shows up and everybody, it's like Poochie. Everybody's talking about him when he's not on screen. Everybody's like, "Where is he? He's so much cooler than all of us guys who are your main characters that you follow every week." Mm-hmm. Like, ugh, terrible. Next Generation took 2 years to get good, and then it got good. But, oof, those 2 years.
Mm. You know, it's funny. We just released, we haven't released it yet, but we just recorded season one. Steve and I, we record our season one review of TNG for Altered Trek, which is our new thing. And there were only, out of the 26 episodes, there were only three that I had major issues with.
I can't remember the name. Was it A Matter of Honor?
Yes.
Is that the Planet Africa
episode
one?
Episode 4, yes.
That is like, okay, like...
Yeah,
you know, even with the standards of the time, that was racist as hell.
So let's see, we got the droids and the message and the yes, I am a full protocol droid. Mm-hmm. Sure you are.
That becomes relevant later. Like
yes, it does.
That's one of my things about storytelling is no character should be superfluous.
Right,
you got to do something sometime to contribute to the plot. I'm convinced that's why everybody. When nobody ever softened on Jar Jar, because like he never did anything significant, except for like kind of give Amidala the idea to use his people as like shields, for the final battle. But like Threepio comes. Well, I mean, for most of this movie, he's basically comic relief, and he provides the translation for R2. But his protocol stuff comes in handy later.
Later, yeah, absolutely, and that's cool.
Yeah, well, and you gotta remember. Star Wars, the original script for Star Wars was much bigger than the movie that got made.
Right.
Like, the ending of Star Wars was supposed, like the ending of Return of the Jedi was supposed to be the ending of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Where they find the planet of the Wookiees, who are a primitive species that helped them fight the Empire. Which was based on Lucas's, not direct experience, but I know it was based on his, because he lived through, I'm stumbling over myself. I know Lucas interviewed a lot of Vietnam veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Like Apocalypse Now was his project that he was working on until Francis Ford Coppola stole it.
Okay.
Which is like where their friendship kind of fell apart. So the and as someone pointed out, so does that mean that the Ewoks are the Viet Cong and the Empire is the United States? And it's like, yeah, actually, it does. Because that was the idea, was this, these primitive people who beat the big, powerful empire that has all the technology. And thematically, even though he doesn't, he's ironically better at it in the original trilogy with thematic stuff than he is in the prequel trilogy. The idea that, you know, the Force is a thing created by living things. And these primitive Ewoks who live, or primitive Wookiees, primitive Ewok, primitive creatures that live in the woods, surrounded by life, they're the ones that are triumphant. And the guys that live, that have everything with machines, and it's all kind of cold and dead, they're the ones that lose. It's all thematic. Like, may not have noticed it, but your brain did.
Yep. Absolutely. Just looking through this cast list, man, just, oh boy. So many. And I forgot that Wedge, is it Wedge that died? One of them dies.
No, Wedge lives. Wedge lives through the entire trilogy.
Does he? Does?
Wedge lives through the entire, he shows up in Rise of Skywalker.
Okay.
Somehow they got Dennis Lawson back.
Yeah, somehow.
Well, so, no, because he did not want to come. He's one of those guys that was like, look, I did this job 30 years ago.
Right.
And like, quit bugging me about it.
Yeah. The only reason why I said, because I know he got hit.
He got tagged and he had to pull out.
Okay. All right. That's right.
Now, the thing is, if you remember in the briefing scene, mm-hmm. Luke is sitting next to a guy. He's talking to a guy. He's the guy who goes, I used to bullseye womp rats back mm-hmm. home, and they weren't. That's known as fake Wedge. Because he was originally supposed to be Wedge, but the actor didn't either show up or couldn't film that day.
Oh,
so there are two Wedges. There are, in fact, two Wedges, in the fake Wedge and the real Wedge. I know all this obscure bullcrap, particularly about the original ones.
Yep, that's good. My least favorite scene out of the whole movie, the trash compactor.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I could do without that. I mean, it was good for like the first like minute and a half, or like the when they first get in there. But after a while, I was like, okay, no thanks. I don't remember correctly, but I swear that battle between Vader and Obi-Wan was longer.
No,
it seemed very short when I watched it this time.
No, and one thing I noticed that was kind of funny, like, there's a scar on the wall, mm-hmm. Which, like, and then I was like, oh, well, they must have, like, and I noticed, and I was like, wow, this is a brand new Death Star. Why is there a big burn scar on the wall? And then later, like a minute later, somebody, either Obi-Wan or Vader hits that wall in mm-hmm. the exact spot, and it, like, zaps and burns. I'm like, oh, that was just from a previous take. Yeah. They didn't re-fix it. Like, I was like, oh.
Yeah,
it's kind of cute. It's kind of funny. I was just watching a video that was like all the kind of like little mistakes and outtakes from Next Gen. You know, mm-hmm. like the cardboard, not the cardboard, but the construction paper on the panels in the background to mm-hmm. blot out the light, stuff yeah. like that. And I was just like, oh, there's a little burn mark on the wall. Like they must be shooting that over again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I mentioned it earlier, and since we're kind of jumping around the plot,
yeah,
and the radio drama. Like that big scary needle is full of like, I don't know, truth serum or something. Like it's, mm-hmm. it's something to make her in a suggestive hypnotic state.
Yeah.
And so when Vader is interrogating her, he's like, you know, what'd you do with the plans? We need the plans. This is your, he starts saying, this is your father. I am your father.
Oh.
Your father wants to know what you did with the plans. And it's so weird. It's like, well, you really are her father. Like, you know,
exactly.
Like they didn't back then, they did not know, but like that was weird and kind of cool. Plus Brock Peters is a good Darth Vader.
Yeah, he is. The scene where they go, where the Luke and Leia have to bungee across the abyss there.
I don't think it's just a regular rope.
Whatever. Probably, yeah, but like that's the only thing I can think of is just what I meant to say was swing, but bungee came out. But yeah, there's that scene, and I gotta say, watching Solo and then watching this, I now see why Han is so crazy when he runs down the hallway yelling in this movie, and then he runs back.
Well, because he turns the corner and there's like, I think that's another one from the special edition where like they originally there was a bunch of stormtroopers in the corridor and then they like, you know, I missed that when I was watching it this time. Like I looked up again and it was like, but isn't it like just this huge room full of stormtroopers?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, originally it was just like the corridor and like a bunch of them. So they expanded that.
Yeah. Well, still, I mean.
No. I mean, the joke's the same, and it's a good joke.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I don't know if I checked out during this time, but it seemed like I don't remember seeing Obi-Wan turn off the tractor beam.
No, he does it.
I know he does it. I saw him sneaking around. I saw him doing all the stuff. But the next thing I see is him and Vader with the fight. Like, I don't remember. I just watched the movie last night, folks. You'd think I'd be able to remember this shit, but having brain damage all my whole life, it doesn't really. Some things just don't compute anymore.
Well, and like I said, I mean, like, I've seen it so many times that it was just, it was hard to focus.
Mm.
You know, because it would be like, okay, I remember seeing the beginning of that scene where he, like, sneaks in the corridor and the two stormtroopers are talking about the new land speeder. Which is, they do a callback to that in Rogue One. And then I didn't actually see the scene where he turns off the power, but I mean, I know what happens. So I got distracted by my phone. Yep. I mean, I know what happens. I've seen this movie a million times. It's the Death Star playset.
Yeah. Like
that little platform is at the top of the playset for him to do the thing. And then there's a little thing where they swing across. They have this tiny little blue plastic rope. They have the garbage masher because it's a major part of the sequence.
Mm-hmm. I really am curious to know, and I don't think we ever find out, because he just kind of shows up in Empire. But I want to know where Vader's ship flew off to when he got hit by Han at the end.
That's in a book somewhere.
Yeah, probably. It is.
Yeah. I remember hearing that, like, I think he loses his one organic arm because the emperor punishes him.
Okay.
There's something in a book somewhere. He gets picked. Also, that I think that the advanced TIEs have hyperdrives.
Oh, cool.
But again, that's like that's from somewhere else too. You know, mm-hmm. Like I think it's only the regular TIEs that don't have hyperdrives.
And like you said, they're small enough; they don't need them. I mean,
well, no, they're. It's basically just you throw a bunch of stuff at the enemy, and like,
yeah, yep. So if you had to pick X-wing or TIE fighter, which would you pick?
Well, having played X-wing versus TIE fighter quite extensively, I mean, if those were my only options, then yes. I would pick the X-wing.
Yeah.
If I could branch it out a little bit, I am a Y-wing guy.
Okay. Because
they're slow and they can take a lot of hits.
Okay.
And I don't have great reflexes. And the Imperial side, the TIE Defender, which is the greatest Imperial ship, and of course Hasbro's never made one because they're buttholes. But yeah, like the TIEs are generally garbage, except for the Defender. And then I prefer the Y wing. The A wing's too fast. I can't handle it. And the B wing's weird. The X wing's fine. I like the X wing well enough. But yeah, the Y-wing and X-wing are more my speed, where they're a little slower and they're a little more. It's like flying a brick, which is a little more my speed. How about you?
This is so stupid, but I like the sound effects from the TIE fighter more than the TIE fighter itself.
Yeah, it's a cool sound effect.
Yeah, I like the sound
design. We haven't really talked about the sound design, but, you know, one of the things that's pretty revolutionary about this movie is it has amazing sound.
Oh, that's the TIE Defender? Holy crap.
Isn't it gorgeous?
It's like seven wings of the original TIE with one. Wow.
No, there's three. It's just three around the central thing.
Well, I was counting each piece, but yes, you are correct. But yeah, man, wow, that's what movie does that show up?
It's not in the movie. That's why Hasbro never made one. It's in X-Wing versus TIE Fighter.
Okay, it's just in the game.
Yeah, it's like the it's the ultimate TIE fighter that you can get.
Oh, wow.
And I think it might have crept up like one or two other places. I mean, I know they made a Lego set and they made a action fleet of it, which I don't think I have the action. Oh, I do have the action fleet.
I gotta remember what. We'll get to it, folks. We're kind of all over the place today, but it is what it is.
If you're listening to this and you have never seen Star Wars, go see Star Wars.
Yes.
Everyone exactly. else is like, I think most people listening to this have seen mm-hmm. Star Wars.
Oh yeah, and we've covered Star Wars plenty of times over the years. Like I said, I the last time I remember watching the movie was when we did it for a movie we can review back. I looked at the date. It was sometime in 2010 because I looked at the post. We did Star Wars Saga Part 1 and Part 2. Part 1 was the original trilogy. Part 2 was the prequels. And that was 14, 15, yeah, 14 years ago, something like that. Yeah. But, you know, I like the X-Wing. I think the X-Wing is cool.
I think, yeah, I think it's I mean, there's a reason that they reused it in the sequel trilogy. It is iconic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's a famous story that I guess the Defense Department mm-hmm. actually went to Lucasfilm and said, "Can we want to look at the design for this thing? Because it's a little too cool. Not a little too cool, but they apparently thought it was a real thing."
Yeah, a little too close to home there, George. That's hilarious. No, I think this movie, even though I have several issues with it, it's not like they're nitpicks at best.
I mean
there's nothing really overall objectively watching this movie again. It's a good story.
Oh yeah, that's
a good first part of a multi-part story.
Yeah.
I
look, I mean, it's hard like looking at it from in the wake of like Endgame and No Way Home. And the wonders that we have seen since then, like, you know, but this was mid-70s technology, $11 million budget. Like, it's the story. And it's also the thing that is really hard to convey to people who have grown up since.
Yeah.
It's the tone.
Yeah.
Like, it is a happy, optimistic, fun tone. And, like, I always use the example of the Raggedy Ann and Andy movie, which was dark and depressing and miserable, and they took us children to it in the 70s. The Watership Down was a children's movie in the 70s. Like, yeah. The 70s were – the big movies were like Godfather and French Connection. They were grown-up movies. They were – there weren't anything for kids. We just had Watergate. We just had Vietnam. Jaws was the first blockbuster, but Jaws was a very 70s movie. It was almost like a Robert Altman film. I mean, I know it was Spielberg, but it was – and it was my mom, when they re-released Jaws, my mom wasn't going to take me to it. She was never going to take me to Jaws. I had to see that on video mm-hmm. because it was a little too dark and intense. Yep. Star Wars was fun. It was light. There were good guys. There were bad guys. It was all very simple. The good guys won. You cannot, like, anyone looking at that film now is not, having not lived through that is not going to get it. They're going to go, oh, this is no, like, they'll like the movie well enough. Maybe they'll even love it, but you cannot understand why that hit like a thunderbolt the way that it did, because we needed that. We needed to feel happy. We needed to feel good. We needed something for the kids to enjoy that the parents wouldn't be too bored watching, you know?
Yeah.
And that was – it was – the tone is what really makes that movie what it is, and then it had a good story. And then, you know, for the time, a lot of that stuff that doesn't necessarily hold up now was groundbreaking.
Yep.
Like, and then you know, we haven't even touched on the music, because I know we're going to do a John Williams episode one day.
Yeah, well,
the music was freaking amazing. And it's just the like it was done well as it could for the time. I think it exceeded expectations in several categories, but it really was the tone. Star Wars came out in 77, but it really was the first 80s movie.
Yeah.
Like, look at the movies of the 80s, and they're all kind of fun and upbeat and I mean, they're not all. But right. most of the big films had a happy, upbeat tone.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, we will be doing music episodes on all 9 films and other parts of Star Wars, but I will say that after I watched the movie yesterday, I have had the 2018 remaster from Walt Disney Records on repeat, beginning to end, for A New Hope by John Williams and others. Did my computer just screw up?
Did it?
This might be an edit point because my screen is not doing what it's supposed to be doing.
It still says it's recording on my end.
Yep. It's just...
Wait, by attending this meeting, I consent to be recorded? What the fuck?
Yes.
Bullshit.
That pops that pops up all the time now because they have to...
You're lucky Illinois has a one-party consent state.
Okay, I think seriously, there you go. Little shit.
I mean, I think you're okay. I mean, everything looks okay.
Yeah, no, I know. It's just everything else that I was trying to go through the article. There we go. No, I don't want the nightlight off. I want it on. My eyes are too old now, and just I can't handle bright light. Yes, I know. It's okay.
I'm 10 years older than you.
Yeah, it's okay. No, you're like, not. You're like, 9 years older than me. Get it right.
I am. Okay, yeah, I am.
You want to be 54 now?
No.
Okay, then.
No, you're like being 53. Like, I used to think I was born to be an old man, and then, like the body never held up super well, but, I mean, like, now it's really falling apart, and I'm like, ugh.
All right. So I'm gonna bring it back. I'm gonna just briefly. Okay. 1 hour, 23 minutes, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. So yes, the music. We will, as I said, or maybe I didn't say yet, we will be
doing. No, you did. Oh. You were listening to the Disney.
Yes. I was Yeah, I was listening to the 2018 original soundtrack, OST remaster, the Walt Disney Records version, from cover to cover, and man, can I listen to this music all the time.
So I have, on CD, I have the original.
The 77, yep.
The original 77 version. I mean, it wasn't, obviously, they don't release the CDs in 77. I have the special edition. I have the symphonic suite, which is the version that they play in concert. And then on my wall, which I'm looking at right now, I have the vinyl, the original vinyl copies of Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi all hang, like, in a row hanging up on the wall.
Oh, that's cool.
And then because Empire is my favorite, I have another Empire on the wall, too.
Oh, of course.
It's the back version. I have it flipped to the back because I love that. That particular piece of artwork from that particular poster is...
Yeah.
Like, where Han and Leia are kissing, and that is... one of the iconic images of my childhood.
Yeah, it's always, like, especially back then when you had records and stuff, when you had LPs, you always wanted to basically, even though you couldn't do this, but you would buy, it's kind of like when you buy two action figures. You buy one to open and you buy one to keep in package. I remember in the mid-90s as a teenager, I would buy... if they were still available, I would buy two copies of whatever vinyl it was, because basically I would cut the sleeve in half to have the two halves showing. Yeah, I know I'm a weirdo, folks. I get it. The sound design. Oh my God. The sound in this movie. It's all so interesting and fun and good. And it just, Like I said, that TIE fighter sound effect.
That kind of roar of an animal.
Yeah. And the lightsaber effects. Even the Falcon. The Falcon
sound. Oh, yeah, I love the Falcon.
Oh, my God. It's so good. And I think it's on Disney Plus. I don't know what. I'd have to look, or you can look at some point, whenever. Not now. Mm-hmm. But there's a series called Galaxy of Sound on Disney Plus.
Yeah, I think I heard of that.
Yep. And they go through various scenes throughout the whole of Star Wars. All of the, like, they made, I don't know if they did an episode on Naboo or whatever, but it's not just the
yeah, gotcha. Not just the original trilogy. It's all.
It's everything. And I watched that a couple months ago. I was like, oh, this is so cool. Cause sound to me, like, I listen to stuff all the time. half the time I'm listening to my TV because I've probably seen that episode of Forensic Files a million times. Like, I like hearing things. I like seeing things too, but like, I would much rather listen to something than have to pay attention and watch it. I can throw on a piece of music or a podcast or whatever. And
in my advancing age, I've become kind of like my mother, where I don't like, I have stuff on just to have noise, just have sound, you know?
Yep.
Like I'll I won't necessarily watch what's on, but like, I just want the set. Like if there's no sound, I get edgy and unhappy.
Yep.
Like I can't work downstairs in the collection without like putting on a podcast or something. And I'm kind of paying attention when I walk. Like when I go out to the park, I've got now big sound canceling headphones and I listen to a podcast and I just, you know, like silence. You kind of don't appreciate how much sound plays a part in our lives. And it's weird when it's kind of gone, when everything's quiet, super quiet.
Yeah. There was one moment, September of last year. As of June this year, I will have been living in my current apartment for 2 years now. So September of last year, in the middle of the night, and I'm sure everyone else that has to sleep with a fan on is like this. If the fan turns off for any reason whatsoever, you wake up from a dead sleep because the fan turned off. The fan turned off. I woke up. It was pitch black. The way my parking lot is that my apartment faces, there are light poles and whatever, like around the dumpsters and obviously for the parking lot so people can see. Well, it obviously gives off a certain amount of light because of the artificial light, but seeing it in complete, I have pictures of, I don't know if you've probably seen that. If not, also, I have two pictures of this and it's just complete darkness and silence. It was the only time in a long time where I really enjoyed the silence because we don't really have silence unless you're in a sensory, unless you're Boba Fett in a sensory deprivation tank. There's the hum of the world, of all the artificial stuff. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. We need power. We need this. We need that. But the fact that there was no power, no nothing, and it was so quiet, that is the time that I really relish silence. The only other time is when I'm asleep. But, I'm right there with you. I need to have stuff on in the background. I need to, you know, I'll be editing this podcast. I'll probably have the score on in the background on my stereo. But, yeah, soundtrack, all of it is so great. Let's see here. Is there anything else that we missed? Anything else you want to bring up?
Not that I can think of. I mean, the one thing that another minor nitpick is at the end, you know, everyone has complained for years and they actually put it in stupid Rise of Skywalker that Chewie never got a medal.
Right.
And if you've read the book written by Alan Dean Foster, but it's got George's name on it.
Right.
Chewie got a medal. It's just that, quote, few princesses are that tall.
Yeah.
So Chewie had a medal. Everybody calm your frickin'. He got a medal.
So again, going by the whole thing of this is a trilogy.
Yeah, but okay.
I understand when it started, it wasn't.
You got to judge it by the standards. To be fair, it was not a trilogy. It was
right.
It was a bigger film that was cut down.
Right. Yeah. And to me, now, looking at it in the lens now, I'm like, oh, I kind of wish they had something. But
they blew up the Death Star and get a medal ceremony. What did you want?
I don't know.
Nobody even got medals in Return of the Jedi. They just danced around and ate stormtroopers. What do you think them Ewoks was cooking? this has always been a thing. Like, what do you think them Ewoks was cooking? I mean, when they're playing the drums on those helmets, where do you think those guys went?
Oh my god! This is
good boy.
Oh my God! The Ewoks are cannibals! Holy crap!
Not, no, no! Whoa, 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 whoa!
Okay,
no.
Oh,
I take except they were not. They weren't eating Ewoks. They were eating people. They're eating humans.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the, cannibals. Isn't eating humans? That's there's another weird name for that.
Yeah,
like cannibalism is that you eat your own kind.
Yeah.
Well, Ewoks weren't cannibals. Like don't you disparage Ewoks like that?
Not trying to disparage them.
They were eating. They were because we know, like, they established they were going to eat Han. They were going to cook him.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not eating these people raw. They're eating them cooked. They're not savages.
Well,
this is why I came around on Ewoks. Like, I was like originally I loved the Ewoks because I was like 13 or 12. Yeah. I was like, oh, they're cute little hamster people. They're neat. And then I was a teenager, and I was like, they're kitty little teddy bear things. And then I was like, those motherfuckers ate people. They ate all those stormtroopers. Like there weren't a lot of prison camps on Endor. There were farms. So, yeah. Those little bastards were hardcore, man.
All right, folks. All right, so before we go to the ad break and all that good stuff and come back with the closing and everything else, what would you rate it 0 to 5 with half points?
Boy, I want to leave room for Empire. So, No, I do. I don't want to be like, I don't want this whole thing to be like the original trilogy is all 5. Everything's great. Everything's wonderful. So like, I guess if we're limited to half points, I would say 4.5.
Yeah.
If I could like be a little cheesy, I'd be 4.75. Okay. But it's a great movie. It's got issues, and yeah, we watch a special edition. So 4.5 is fair,
I think. Yeah. I think I'm gonna give it a 3.5.
Okay, was that just because of the ending?
Yeah, pretty much. Ever since I was 7 years old, I've been disappointed by that ending. Like, I wanted more. I don't know what more I wanted, but I wanted more. After I watched, like you said, they blow up the Death Star, and I understand they have to go back to the base and whatever, but like, the middle ceremony is kind of cheesy. Just the way that it's filmed, it's shot, the way.
All I'm gonna say is that you, my friend, could then put in another tape and have more. I had to wait 3 friggin' years. And I almost think that's a good thing, because you get to digest it. You get to sort of, you know, get used to it. Like, one of the issues I have with the Marvel system is that they're always like before the next movie comes, before the current movie comes out, they always start to tease the next movie.
Yep.
And it's like, let us enjoy this movie. Let's appreciate this movie and then move on. Yeah. Like it does make you feel like you're in it's a marketing thing rather than an organic thing. Like, mm-hmm. Just let us have this for now, and then when we want the next one, you bring in the next one. Yep. Like you're rushing through it. They because it's all about money. They want to rush through it and like get the money while they can.
Yeah, that's true. So a 4.5 from Dave, a 3.5 from me. We're gonna go to a quick ad break, and we will come back to close the show right after this.
Your destiny lies with me, Skywalker. Obi-Wan news to be true.
So let's say you're looking for a podcast to your favorite 80s comic books, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Ninja Turtles, He-Man, etc. Where are you going to go to find us?
Welcome to Star Joe's Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan.
And I'm Chuck. That's right, everybody. We're the Star Joes. We host a podcast called Star Joe's Podcast, where we talk about your favorite comic books, your favorite toys of all the 80s properties.
Star Wars, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Mask, Thundercats, Voltron, you name it, we cover it. If it's in the 80s, we'll cover it at some point.
Yeah, so what you want to do to find us, you can go to iTunes, you can go to www.starjoes.com.
And remember, the Force will be with you.
Because knowing us is half the battle.
Hey, Jared, I have this idea for a new show for the network.
What is it?
You know how I liked the 1990s comic book series, The New Warriors?
Yeah. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm, yep.
And you know how at the Long Boss Crusade we're trying to get the YouTube channel going?
Yes, also correct.
Well, thanks. So, how about you and me do a live stream show about the New Warriors? You've never read the books before, and I have them, and so that's a great setup. We could give it a catchy name, like Come Out to Play. Don't you think that's the greatest idea?
Sure, 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 Delvin. That's a great idea. Just one question.
Yeah?
Why do you have me dangling off this ledge, holding me by only one arm?
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll get it soon. I hope. Come Out to Play, a New Warriors podcast, comes to you live on YouTube every second Tuesday of the month at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Longbox Crusade channel. If you can't watch it there, we replay them on the Longbox Crusade Network podcast feed, available anywhere podcasts can be found. We invite you to come along for the ride, or in other words, New Warriors, come out to play, yay!
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or GeekCastRadio.com.
Like science fiction? Of course you do, or you wouldn't be listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Well, the Marku 42's Universe podcast is an award-winning sci-fi radio show that's been around for over 10 years. We cover everything from Doctor Who to the MCU to pop culture and everything in between. A new show drops on Tuesday mornings on the GCRN website and all of the major podcast platforms. So listen to the Marku 42's Universe podcast from the universe and beyond.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing. Car, car.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
All right, folks, we are back. Episode 77 of Studio 2009 here on the GeekCast Radio Network. Star Wars is in the books. I still really dig the movie. I really do, regardless of its faults.
Regardless of its crappy rating that you gave it.
Hey, wait a second here. 3.5 out of 5 is not bad. Yeah. I'd give it a 1.5. Then I could see.
You know, first of all, if you really don't like something, you really don't like something, and there's nothing. If you give it a 1.5, I would have been less offended than this tepid 3.5 nonsense. The only reason I went low is because you can't be a jerk and go Empire 6 out of 5, 12 out of 10, a billion out of 100. I'm not that kind of guy. You always got to leave room.
Yeah.
But spoiler alert for episode 80, I guess.
Yeah.
And ironically, Empire is not my favorite movie. It's my favorite Star Wars movie, but it's not my favorite movie.
Right. It's not your favorite movie. Yep. Yeah. Anything else you would like to say before I run through the closing, sir?
No. I don't know. So much has been said about Star Wars, it's kind of hard to get a fresh take. I think that's why we rambled so much.
Yeah.
It's hard to get a fresh take on something that's so old and so iconic to the culture. But, if you haven't, if you really have never seen the movie, go watch it. It's a fun movie. If you haven't seen it in a while, maybe go revisit. Because that was a thing, I will say, I avoided rewatching the original movies for a long time because I was worried. I was worried because I had seen a couple of things I loved as a kid, like Thunder the Barbarian, the cartoon.
Right.
I loved it as a kid. And you go, oh, Well, that phrase, because I was a kid, is suddenly very relevant. And I was worried that Star Wars would hold up. And I think, again, you gotta see it for a product of its time. But even so, I think it holds up pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, folks, even though he says I rated it low, I didn't really rate it low. Because like you said, you have to have some way of going up. And
you're gonna go crazy and give Empire a 4. You madman. Calm down.
Can you predict the other one then?
No, because Jedi tends to bounce weird. I think either people are with it or against it.
Mm.
It's kind of like the Indiana Jones movies. Each movie kind of bounces one way or the other. You either like one or the other. Mm. Like people either like Jedi or they hate it because of the Ewoks.
Mm.
Kind of is how it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to be doing this in the future, folks. Raiders of the Lost World here on Studio 2009, because I shocked the hell out of Dave, and I told him, I said...
Oh, that's right, you have never seen Raiders.
The only one I've seen is Last Crusade. I saw, like, a half a second of Temple of Doom and scared the crap out of me, and I'm like, nope, never again. I was a kid when that happened. I was like, nope, never again. But Last Crusade, you betcha.
I will say Temple of Doom trained me to pace my soda drinking. That wasn't because I honestly don't think I ever saw the scene where Indy and Willie flirt
mm-hmm.
until it came out on video, because that was always when I went to go pee.
Wow. That's hilarious.
This is true.
Thank you for joining us here inside Studio 2009. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. Send any email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. You can check us out on all the podcatching clients. I prefer Spotify, but that's just me. Follow us on Twix, because I've refused to call it X, and Twitter, unfortunately, is gone, so I'm calling it Twix now. At Geekcast Radio, at It's ITS Studio 2009, all one word. I am at TFG1Mike. Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekcastRadioNetwork. You can also check out Studio 2009 over there, as well as joining the Toy World Order fans group. Join us next time when my old buddy Sean, a.k.a. Mr. I Am Old Schools, drops by, and we'll be talking about Ford versus Ferrari. For now, I'm TFG and Mike with...
David Draper.
You'll hear us back in the studio soon.
Are you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder?